Welcome to the Killer Frogs. This is episode 111 for October 2nd, 2018. Joining us on this week's podcast are Wes, WC, and Shannon. I'm Sean, and the topics for this week are the Del Conte curse is finally broken, it's Hall of Fame weekend, Sean Robinson, is there a quarterback controversy, the turnovers, the defense, knee pads, really? Okay, refs, when is it targeting? Where did all the touchdowns go? The offensive line, and finally, what makes Ben Banigou better than Leon Lett? All right, guys, it's just the guys this week. Let's talk a little bit about the Del Conte curse, as Ryan so affectionately called it. Wes, we were talking about this earlier. The soccer team just got their first top 10 win over Texas.
Hey, that was a huge win. And, you know, not only was it the first victory ever over a top 10 opponent by our women's soccer team, it was their seventh shutout of the season, which is another impressive statistic. They had double-digit shots for the 11th time, shots on goal for the 11th time this season, double-digit shots. They allowed double-digit shots for just the fifth time this season. They outshot their opponent for the ninth time this season. The goalkeeper notched her third career shutout. I think we might have a pretty good team there. What do you guys think?
Definitely.
I actually watched some of this on TV, and let me tell you, if their goalie wouldn't have been as good as she was, we'd have beat them by more, because we played in their end.
Hey, do you hear
most of the night? Or most of the day.
Good. That's what you got to do. You got to shoot the ball down there.
I really was. Their goalie made some exceptional saves.
Yeah, it was nice to see how many shots on goal we had. Yep. And that's what you got to have, obviously, in that game. Because, I mean, otherwise you're just running around for no reason. But having shots on goal is key. And this team does it very, very well. And it was nice to get that win against Texas. Especially Texas, after what's happened the last couple of months.
Yeah.
Yeah, so congrats to the women's soccer team. That was a well-earned win. Thanks for notching that first top 10 win. And you ladies keep having one hell of a season, because this is fun to watch.
His first loss?
Sorry, what was that, Dubber?
Was that Texas' first loss, too?
I believe so.
That even made it sweeter.
Yeah. It is nice. Like I said, anytime you beat Texas is a good day.
They've got a great season going on so far. They're 8-3-2, mm-hmm. which is not too bad. Conference 1-2-1, and 6-1-2 at home, and 2-2 on on away games. So not too bad. Keep it going, girls.
Well, the great thing is that they're improving every week.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean it's not just playing up to the level of competition. They're visually improving. I mean, it's fantastic to watch. So if you haven't made it out to a soccer game this year, definitely go and check that out, because it's well worth it. It's a great atmosphere. Also this week, we had the Hall of Fame weekend. So we want to congratulate the 51st class of the TCU Hall of Fame. Let's see. You guys know a few of these people. Here we have Brashant Carter, Virgil Hodge, Mike Keithley, Jason Phillips, Adrian Ross, and Simpson DeGreat.
Great class. Awesome class. I know, Dover, you're in there, and I'm on the board and have opportunity to look at all these great athletes to measure up against each other from, you know, old school to new school. And I'm telling you, we've got a bunch of athletes that are deserving to be in the Hall of Fame. Obviously, we can only pick so many. But I think this class here was a mixture of just great athletes from women, men, all sports, obviously. And sometimes you get a little bit more than you know, on one side of the on the sports side. You know, last year we didn't have one football. This year we had two. And so great class, had an awesome weekend. And it was, again, Dub, you're out there with them. This is kind of, you know, you get to go back out there every year and hang out and be a part of that, be a part of the inductee ceremony and stuff like that. But great weekend, a lot of fun, a lot of energy, and look forward to next year.
Yeah. Well, I remember Simpson DeGreat because he played back when I was there. And he wasn't very big. He was 6'4", I believe. And they had him playing inside. But that guy can play really high. He could play above the rim. And really impressive player. Played hard. He followed Goode Kennedy. Now, I know you guys don't know who Goode Kennedy is, but Goode was one of the most impressive rebounders and shot blockers I've ever seen in my life. And he was only 6'6". Not a particularly huge guy, but sent him to great. I think was a JUCO player that transferred in here. But Mac, he can put on an exhibition out there. Great player and well deserved to be in the Hall of Fame.
Well, that is amazing to me. It's just, you know, you kind of get caught up in your sport. You start listening to what some of these other athletes did in other sports, and wow, I mean,
yeah,
I mean their credentials are unbelievable. I mean, yeah, looking at them, stuff like that.
Absolutely.
What they've done and stuff like that. It's like, wow. You think, how, and then you think, well, a couple of them, you think, how are they not in there yet? And you figure out, well, you got to wait 10 years and they got 10 years and then they were in.
Yeah. Some are first ballots, some are not. But man, it's intriguing and awesome about the banquet. You hear everybody's story.
Yep.
And whether you know them or not, seen them play or not, when they tell their stories and their journey, how they got to TCU. It's just awesome to hear because everybody's story was different.
Yeah.
You got people that were grew up in different countries and they found a way to TCU. They were dirt poor in their country to people who, you know, got a scholarship, got it taken away, went to another school, played basketball, came back, found a way at TCU. Just story after story, and they found their home and they're so appreciative of to wear the purple, and it oozes out of their speech. And so I've always found that intriguing and exciting to hear everybody's story the night of the banquet. And no matter how long they ramble, we're all tuned in listening to,
every story is so different. That's you're right. That's probably my favorite part of just listening to stories. Anyway, like I said, then you kind of get to go out like the next night. They had a little happy hour, and I did that with them. You kind of get to know, got to get to know them more and more and stuff like that. It's just a lot of fun. Just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You guys bleed that purple just like you do.
Yes,
like that.
Yeah, it was good to see them, especially when they all line up there at halftime and get recognized by the fans. And that was something special.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the football game. Iowa State comes into Fort Worth, and the Frogs find themselves in a bit of a dogfight for four straight quarters until Jonathan Song hits a game-winning field goal, and the Frogs win 17-14. But this was this was not a pretty game from beginning to end, but it was a win, and it was a win that the team definitely needed, especially after the last 2 weeks. But let's start talking about the game with the quarterback, Sean Robinson. Now, I know a lot of people he's caught a little bit of flack for this game from some of the fans, but I'll be honest with you guys. I think for the most part, he did a pretty decent job and had some amazing throws, but that hit at the end of the game kind of spells trouble for his season. What did you guys think about Sean Robinson?
Well, I thought he played a pretty good game. Statistically, it was great. But I agree with you, that shot, that hit he took at the end of the game, well, it kind of scares me. And I guess he had a little bit of shoulder problem going into the game or earlier in the season. But
yeah, the report was he was going to play injured in this game.
Yeah, well, I will be. I hope he plays injured next week or is able to play injured. But I'm afraid he may be out for a while. I don't know. We'll see.
I think Sean, I look at him like everybody does, but I mean, I thought he played pretty well. He's a young quarterback. He's still got to figure out how to cut out the little mistakes. You know, he underthrew the one touchdown pass that got intercepted. That didn't make me as much as the, you know, I knew somebody didn't block a guy and he kind of had a free run at him. But when you're sidestepping out of the way, you got to protect the ball. That's probably the biggest thing Sean's got to learn. I mean, you just see he's athletically and, you know, mentally, and he's got all the makeups to be a great quarterback.
Yeah.
It's just going to take a little time. But now, I don't know, I guess we probably really won't know about Sean until about after the Tech game, because I just don't see Patterson putting it out there until he has to, and I don't think he has to until after the game starts.
Oh, I agree.
I think that's what we'll really figure out with Shad's if he's playing or not. Now, there might be some other people who's got some inside scoop and this and that, but I don't think that he's going to show his hand at all what's happening.
No. Patterson will. He's not going to show anything.
Oh, he's going to hold it close to the vest, as he always does. Shannon, what did you think about Sean Robinson in this game?
Listen, he played a decent game. I mean, guys, you know, I'm looking at the body of work. I think we had this conversation at halftime, Sean.
Yeah.
You know, when we first got going, nobody knew. We didn't know. We are who I thought we were, whatever that quote is. Well, after a while, 4 or 5 games in, you take the first two, easy game, then SMU, the rain, the delay, and all that. So we chopped that game up to all that, right?
Right.
Then we beat up for Ohio State and we lose that game due to mistakes. We beat ourselves. And so from that point, we thought as fans that we had a pretty good team. We knew if they played like that, minus the mistakes, we knew we had a great opportunity to go and do some big things. Well, then Texas happens. And we didn't like how that ended up. And we all got opinions about that. We're basing that off what our eyes saw, right? Mm-hmm. And so we come into this game saying, well, Ohio State's not going to lay down. They're not going to die for us. They're going to play us pretty tough. And they did. And so this is one of those games. Yeah, we made mistakes, but I mean, I think it was one of those games where, well, yeah, we made mistakes. They made it hard for us in certain situations, and we found a way to win. Okay. We found a way to win.
Yeah. You took the words out of my mouth because I could hear him saying, we got to find a way to win games like that. And we
got to find a way to win that game. If you lose that game, then, I mean, it's just over. I mean, it's just,
You
got to find a way to win the game at home. Pretty ugly and indifferent. You just got to find a way. And they did that. So I say all that to say, guys, the team that we have before us is who they are. We're going to have ups and downs.
Yep.
Yes, as fans, we want to see them win every game. But listen, guys, I'm going to chop this season up as a rebuilding season because that's what they're giving us. We're playing. We don't know how to play hurt yet. We've got to buy. We'll see what happens after buy because there's always something that happens after buy. Two things. Either you're going to come out fired up and you're going to have a different season or you're going to play the same or probably even worse. That's what happens after buys.
Yeah.
Let's just call it what it is. So after the way we play, I'm going to chop it up as that. And that's not a bad thing, guys. That's not a bad thing at all because, you know, again, you get some young people in there, and we'll talk about the quarterback issue in a little bit, I guess. But you get people and you start getting playing time and learning experience. And once the young people get confident and they put something together and they gel, then now you have a football team. Unfortunately, that may not happen till next year.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, and youth is probably the best way to describe this team. I mean, they're youth and inexperience. And and we actually also talked about it on post game. Shannon was undisciplined, and they need to learn how to actually win in these situations. And these are the kind of games that you're hoping for a young team to be able to overcome, get past. Obviously, we've got a bye week. Going into a bye week with a win is always a plus. But like you said, coming out of this bye week, we're going to learn a lot about how this team is going to play for the rest of the season.
But discipline, just so we're clear, and because we had the conversation, but you know, some people take that as a negative. What we're saying is sometimes when in practice you're taught to break down before hit. In practice, you're taught to how to, you know, the technical side of the game. Well, sometimes when you get in the game, you know, adrenaline's pumping and you're high, you try to make the kill shots and all that kind of stuff. And guys, you guys are seeing, like I'm seeing, the missed tackles. I mean, I'm just, you know, not picking on him, but I saw him make some critical plays where we have people stop and they bounce off or, you know, run through the tackle and they gain the first down or something like that. And you have corners, you know, coming up for the blast. And I had this same issue in high school that I was always trying to take somebody's head off. You got to sometimes break down and secure the tackle, as we put it, because it versus it being third down and 5, now it's first down because they just simply didn't do their job and just make the tackle. And so that's what we mean on discipline. You know, we got 55 yards and penalties and stuff like that. And we'll talk about the referees. And Sean, I think we need to put the referees on blast. If we're going to talk about our players, why not talk about the referees?
Oh, it's coming. It's coming.
I found their name so we can call them out by name. But that's what we mean on discipline. Not that they're going against Coach Patterson's word and all that kind of thing.
No. It's not an out of control locker room. That's not the situation we're talking about here. It's just, you know, they're just young players.
Well, you know, the other thing about that, you know, some of the young players, but even some of the old players, like you said, Ty, Ben Bettigue made a great play, missed a great play too.
Mm-hmm. The third,
you can talk about Sean all you want to, this, that, but the third 25 or whatever it was, he makes it.
That was brutal.
Right there, if he just holds him up to let somebody get there, that's the game's a mute point at that point in time.
Yep.
Yeah.
If our tight end decides not to try to be a hurdler.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's right then, that game's over with. This too. I think if you look at Iowa State, you see what they've done all through the season. They make you play ugly.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what they want. They want you to play ugly, and they hope they get you to play ugly. And if they do, then they know that's their best opportunity to win. I had no problem with the game. You know why I had no problem with the game? Because I wanted it. You know what? If we'd scored again and put them away, it'd probably been better in some minds. But in my mind, it was just kind of nice to see them have to face some adversity and not have it wrapped up and have to come back and win the game at the end.
Right. Yeah.
That's going to go a long way, confidence.
It is.
The second thing that's going to happen, too, is when they get to this bye week, this is when some of them young players, they can slow it down again. You know how it is week to week, Shannon. I mean, crap, when you're going to the next week, you ain't got time. I mean, you're teaching them things, but you really don't have time to slow down and just break it all the way back down to the basics almost, because you're getting prepared for another team. Yeah. Now, this week, they're going to be able to slow it down, say, all right, see, we're doing this wrong. We're doing that wrong. We're doing, you know, and really focus in on some of the stuff that's really been hurting them. Some of the basic stuff that they can definitely take away. And I think I feel pretty good about our team. Still, I still think I agree with you. I think the frustrating things will be 1 week we're going to look like we're all world, and then the next week we're going to turn around and go, wow, what happened to that team? And yeah, we might only win by one or two or three, or we might lose by two or three. You're right. But I just think it's going to be like that the whole year. But you know what? There's some good to that. There's some good if they learn how to win out of that situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one thing that did not turn out to be good from this game is obviously the injury to Sean Robinson, and we have no idea. And like we said, Patterson's not going to say anything about this, but the tweet that kind of came out from post game was that it appears that Patterson is a little upset with Senekumbi because he was expecting Collins to rotate in more for Robinson. Now, I don't know whether that was just because Robinson was playing injured or he wanted to see Collins get more meaningful snaps, but whatever the case was, Collins did not get those snaps until Robinson got hurt. And I think the quote was, if Robinson is done, Patterson is not going to be happy because of what he expected Cumbie to do in that game. And I have two questions based on that information. The first question is, do you think we would have been able to beat Iowa State had they rotated the two quarterbacks in and out? And the second question is, isn't Gary Patterson the head coach? Can he get on the headset and tell Cumbie, I don't care what you're doing, get Collins in there next?
Well, that's what I would think at the end of the day. He's the head coach in charge of that program. And he should say, Sonny, put him in now and get Robinson out of there for a little bit.
I don't know if we could have won the game or not because we haven't seen enough of Collins. I mean, that's the it factor. You have no idea of that. And, you know, now the trend, and I don't know – I do know it only because my son has played some college ball and this and that. And there's a big trend that these coaches let their head coach let their coordinators do what they think is correct for their side of the ball. But at the same time, I'm old school. I can't help it. I mean, if Patterson wanted him to play, there wouldn't have been if he'd been playing. I mean, in my mind. Because you're the head coach.
That's right.
You know, so, you might not tell him how to run.
From my side, that answers.
But you can at least go, hey, I want him to get two series. I want him to get three series in the first half. You do it however you want to, but make it happen. And then turn around and walk off.
Well, I like that. And And so let's just put it this way. To answer your question, I'll put it like this. Gary is the head guy, all right? And I'm old school like you, Scott. I mean, Nick. And I believe if we felt like we had a better opportunity to win the game or have some success, the guy would have been in the game.
Yep.
Now, the thing about it, we hadn't seen I'm going to always say no when I hadn't seen somebody play enough football to determine if we can win the game with him. That's like going to throw my money at Vegas, and I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but I expect to win. I don't know what's going on. Well, no.
Sounds like me in Vegas.
Yeah, so it's just like, that's why I don't gamble. Yeah. So it's just like, if we feel, and again, guys, this is one of those situations where Gary, we understand and know Gary has no problem being the head coach.
Right.
We know he's a stern head coach, and he means business. If he really wanted the backup in the game, he makes the call right then and there. I mean, I believe in Austin where we were in the booth and we saw Sean run out, and I saw personally Gary tell him to get out right then and there.
Yep.
So you tell me if he doesn't have the part. Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is, listen, they got to be on the same page. He has the authority, and I think he will make that final call. If he thought that we had a better opportunity to have some success with the backup in, he would do that. So apparently those guys now when it comes to the coordinator, Mr. Cumby, Coach Cumby, and the plan for the game, does he have two plans? Does he have?
That's a good question.
Collins, I mean, that goes into it. Does he throw him in and run the basic because there's no plan for him for the game? We don't know. All I'm saying is we don't really – there's a lot of ifs there, right? But to answer your question, no. I don't think we would have won the game because we hadn't seen enough from the quarterback to show us that he could come in and be the guy lead us to the promised land for even one game. Two is I believe Gary Patterson, if he really wanted the quarterback in, he'd have made that decision.
Yeah. Well, I don't think at all that he said it in the sense that he's saying, I want Collins in there because I think he's better than Sean, or I think we need to give him an opportunity to be better. I think he does it like his linebackers and his front line. The quarterback's a little different spot, but I think the reason he says that, hey, get this guy a little playing time in, he ain't got no cold turkey.
Right, yeah, and that's what we're going to end up having next week against Tech, because from all accounts, it seems like Robinson is definitely not going to come back in time for Tech. I mean, the Tech quarterback had a collapsed lung. He's probably going to be back for this game before Robinson is even close to being ready. But Collins is going to come in, and he's pretty much going to be cold turkey, because other than a couple of snaps here and there, he's really had no meaningful playing time this season.
Well, guys, look at what happened last year this time of year. Who came in and played against Texas Tech last year for us?
Oh, yeah. Oh, and Robinson did a great job against a ridiculous windy day and everything else, and he did fine. And so, no question about it, but we haven't seen enough of Collins yet to know.
Yep. Right.
Yeah.
Don't know. Yeah, it's hard to call.
People say they want to see him. Guess what?
No, they get their wish. Absolutely. Well, let's move on, and let's talk about turnovers here for a moment. You guys mentioned one of them, which was what was it? He's the tight end 6'6", and he's trying to do a vertical over a guy who's, 6'3", and that was the craziest thing I'd ever seen in my life, a tight end try to hurdle a straight-up defender. and I don't even think he even got close. And that was probably one of the worst turnovers I'd seen in a while. And then the other two being the Sean Robinson fumble, which led to Iowa State's first touchdown, and then that deep pass into triple coverage. But what is going on with the turnovers here, guys? We seem to be plagued with turnovers this season.
I'm going to tell you, I don't mind the deep ball. If he throw the deep ball a little deeper, it'd have been a touchdown.
And sooner if he let him.
He had him beat. I mean, he had everybody beat. Sean just threw it a little short. The one that bugged me with Sean was when you see a guy coming right at you, you got to pull the ball up. You got to get it tight when you're scrambling.
Yeah, protect the ball.
If you can't get to him, you strip, strip. And even if you're running by, strip the ball, And so you gotta protect the ball. That would frustrate me more than the other thing, just because I feel like you got to know when to tuck the ball up where you don't get it, where you don't get it. And then the other deal, I guarantee you, the tight end, he'll never do that again, because he'll never live that down.
Hey, he may never get another ball thrown his way for the rest of the season the way we play with tight ends.
He's just He's too talented. That kid's turning into a good ball player.
Oh, I agree. Absolutely. But I mean, my concern is that with the way that we've play called with tight ends in the past, it's like Gary may be like, okay, the tight end experiment is over. I hope not, because he's been a really good asset. I'd like to get him involved more.
Yeah. Well, that dude's he could become a security blanket for some of them guys. I mean, both quarterbacks, really. He's a big target, good hands. He just got he made a dumb mistake.
That's he's just not a track star. That's just the case.
Thought he was Zeke.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. You've been watching too much pro football.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy.
Yeah, but as far as Sean on the, listen, we're going to get picks. We're going to get my issue is how he's doing it. As I'm watching him throw the ball, it reminded me of Kenny from last year. And I'm looking, I don't know. And we saw Sean make some great throws before. We know he can do it, but
some of
the throws, he never even followed through. I mean, I'm looking at the back foot and it stays planted on the ground. Never comes across. He just basically yings it without. As I was looking at it, my mind went instantly to that. I'm like, man, come on, Sean. That's not you. You're supposed to be our deep ball guy. And with that means you got to take your three steps, your five steps, whatever, and follow that thing all the way through with everything you got and throw the ball. So it's almost like he's afraid of overthrowing it or something. I'd rather that happen than the pick, but just throw the ball. So. Listen, it's all learning. It's good film for him to learn off of, and I'm sure they're coaching him up to the best of their ability. And he's a smart kid. He's going to learn from it. I'm sure at some point we'll see a complete game. I mean, one of those things where it's going to click in his head. He's going to make those decisions as you're talking about WC. And we just got to believe that. Just knowing his dad and just knowing where he comes from, I believe he'll get it done.
Yep. Well, at this point, I'd like to see just one game without any turnovers. That would be a step. That'd be the next stepping stone for me.
That would be a beautiful thing to see.
That would be nice. But let's talk, on the other side of the ball, though, is defense. And I think the defense had a pretty good game. They did give up two touchdowns. Obviously, both of them, one off of a turnover, and the other one was on that busted 3rd-and-25 Dubber mentioned where Banigou just didn't slow up, didn't contain, didn't wrap up, and he ends up breaking for a first down on a 3rd-and-25. That just gassed the defense and allowed Iowa State to get their second touchdown. But outside of those two mistakes, I think defense played a pretty good game.
They played a great game. How many yards did Iowa State have? I mean, at one point
they didn't even have 100 yards in the first half.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
They didn't even have 80 yards in the first half.
No, they had 72 yards in the first half.
Yeah.
I think did they say they held them under 200 yards?
Yeah, they did.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you want to give confidence to your offense, start playing some good defense and start having their back. And I'm telling you, man, putting up points on defense is a must. When your offense is struggling, that's when defense come alive. It's like, hey, guys, we got to score. I mean, that's what you say. That's when you hit the field, it's like, guys, we need a strip. We need to pick. We need to put some – if we want to be a great defense, like we've been in the past or whatever the case, they've got to put up some points on defense, bottom line. And so right now I think we're going to see more ball hawks. I think we're going to end up with more picks. I think they're going to stress that. Knowing Patterson at defense, we're going to stress, picks and getting that ball out, stuff like that, because we have to give the offense more opportunities to score.
Well, what I'm seeing, and we did get that scoop and score from Banigou, which was great, and we'll talk about that later. But what I'm seeing right now is the difference between what we saw in the Ohio State game and what we're seeing now in Big 12 play. In the Ohio State game, Patterson was able to play his secondary off the receivers a bit, and the speed made up for that. And when we moved to Texas, we were still playing off, but the speed wasn't able to compensate because Texas was just as fast as we were. Same thing for Iowa State in some way, but for the most part, secondary did a good job on the big receivers. But my point is that we still have a secondary that's still trying to figure things out. And what I'm seeing is that he hasn't really trusted those guys to really do press and stay on that island with their receivers, which will open up some of those opportunities to get those picks.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing is, you talk about the speed. Ohio State did something. Texas did something Ohio State didn't do. Texas did try to burn us downfield all the time.
Yeah.
And so we could play off. That's where Texas kind of caught us, said, all right, you're going to play off a little bit. We need 6 yards. We're going to run 7 yards, turn around, catch the ball, and fall down. And they did that over and over again. So So I feel like speed wise and stuff like that, we match up with anybody. But
well, we do, but I think we need to press more.
Quarterbacks look like revolving doors at times. Put another one in, and then the next play, that one's back in there, and he pulls out. He's trying to coach him up as he goes along, and that secondary especially, and you could see him doing it. I like I said, I think that slows down this next week or so. They'll get to hone in on some of that.
They can turn this thing around, and man, we can have a great season, but just given the facts and the percentage of that opportunity, we got people hurt. You got your safety hurt. You got Turpin went out with a cut. You got Sean hurt. I mean, that's three of our stars right now. We want to go on a 6-7 game winning streak with three of your stars hurt. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So you got to call it. You got to call it what it is, and that's why you just take it one week at a time.
Yep.
After this bye.
All right. So let's talk about defense did a good job. Offense, obviously, we have some issues there, but let's talk about one nagging issue I have with this game, and that was not just the bad officiating, but the incompetent officiating.
I think I would have used some other words, but incompetent, let's go with that.
I'm cleaning it up just a little bit, Wes.
Yeah, I know. I tend to turn the air blue, so I won't do it this time. But, that non-targeting call, I mean, my God, he just took Turpin's head off.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't get it. And some of the calls in there where they weren't non-calls. I mean, I don't know what these guys are thinking. Now, I know Patterson complained to the league, and I hope he does, because that stuff was just uncalled for. I mean, it was just sheer incompetence. And have we not had luck or bad luck with that crew before in the past?
Yeah, they have been one of the worst officiating crews in the Big 12. Consistently.
Well, I think they need to be in the Sun Belt Conference next year. I don't know if you can get rid of them this year, but they're terrible.
Well, I mean, let's go over some of the calls here. So we'll talk about Turpin call in a minute, but you had that wrap up down by the goal line where it was just blatant that their defensive back just wrapped up the receiver before the ball even got there. No flag. Yeah. You had a late hit out of bounds that was called on TCU earlier, was not called against Iowa State. You had the punch to the head of Anderson. Did you guys see that one?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That was crazy. Anderson gets held up on the sideline, and I understand the Iowa State player was going to try to punch the ball out, but hits Anderson in the head, and there's a no call there. But the most egregious one of all, outside of the stupid knee pad thing, is the non-call for targeting. And I posted this up on the board on Sunday because I thought it was the explanation, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I believe the explanation from the referees when they came up out of the review was simply Turpin was not considered a defenseless player, therefore it can't be targeting.
That was correct.
And so here is the problem that I had was, A, I've never heard the targeting rule called that way before, and B, was he not a defenseless player? So I went back, I took a look at the actual rules, and here is what it says. A defenseless player, the rule, if you want to look it up at home, the rule is 2-27-14, and there's several different categories as far as what is considered a defenseless player, but here is the pertinent part. You are considered a defenseless player if, quote, you are a ball carrier already in the grasp of an opponent whose forward progress has been stopped. Was that not the definition of what happened during that play?
Yeah, that's as I saw it, it was.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I have no idea what in the world these guys were thinking about. And what makes it even worse, it was the replay booth as well that got it wrong.
Yeah.
So, well, I tell you, when you have a game – and we're for the most part, our play seems to be a little. We have some. Let me see if I put this right way. Playing discipline and being undisciplined out there is two different things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my point being is, we had five penalties for 55 yards. They had one for 15.
Hey, it's a clean football game.
Now, come on now. Now, as we talk about these players and we call them out, that Mr. Smith, which is the referee of the game, and the umpire is Mr. Fitzgerald, and the lineman judge was Mr. Smith, and Mr. Riley, and Mr. another field judge, Mr. Smith. Hey, guys, we got to get this together. You guys has got to start being called out like the players and everybody else that's playing a game on Saturday, because you have fault too, and your missed calls can determine somebody's dream and somebody's hopes of next level, and also somebody getting hurt because of what we saw with Turpin. Now, come on, guys. I mean, that was, listen, one penalty, one freaking penalty, and we saw a mini. Yeah. And so I'm thinking, where the hell, what are you guys looking at?
Yeah.
You know, and so it bothers me, and it's upsetting, and we're at home. Hell, I thought we were supposed to get the calls at the house. So, I mean, if anything, I get it. I get sports. You're on the road, yo. It's a tough road trip. But to call a game and picking penalty, that, come on, that's almost unheard of. That's ridiculous.
Right. Well, the problem that I have with the referee in this particular sense, when you have this amount of incompetence going on, it sends a message to the players that I can get away with stuff. Now, a Matt Campbell team, I'm not expecting his players to be that sort of player. But we all know there are certain teams in this conference that if the referees give you an inch, they're going to take a mile. And they're going to take somebody's head off eventually. And I think that's one of the worst things when you're talking about the incompetence of this particular officiating crew, is that you send that particular message to the wrong team, and you're going to get somebody hurt severely. And Turpin definitely was hurt. I think it's just a concussion, but you know, that's ridiculous. Because at that point in time, you had opened it up. A lesser team would have taken that as carte blanche to basically do helmet-to-helmet hits anytime somebody was wrapped up because, oh, guess what? You're a runner. You're not defenseless anymore, according to this group.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nope, I agree. Because trust you me, as football players and as a physical defense, and you see those calls and you get away with it, where my head is like, oh, I got, you know, listen. We can, it's unleash time, you know, and that's just because they are allowing that hit that should have been called. And as a player, I know it should have been called. And now I can have a chance to take somebody's head off coming across the middle that's a little bit bigger than that guy was. Oh, I'm taking that opportunity for sure.
Yeah.
And so, and that's why they call the ref, you know, they call it them taking control of the game, be it basketball, football, whatever. The referees take control of the game, make those calls, and they set the tone from jump. Then you kind of like, okay. It keeps you playing within those lines, you know. But to your point, Sean, you're right.
Well, talk about taking control of the game. Have you guys heard this many knee pad violations in a single game this year?
Yeah, I got to think that the Big 12 referee committee has come, and we're gonna take care of the first week or two of conference play. It'll be interesting to see if they continue to do it. But
well, they didn't do it at Texas, did they?
Well, you're right.
I don't remember them once doing it at Texas, and I know some of those Texas players weren't wearing proper knee pads.
They might have decided that, hey, after that first week or whatever, that they decided, because that's what it – to me, that's what it almost had to be. Surely it had to be that, because that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
What I don't understand is – I understand the reason why they want you to do it. A lot of people think it's because – it's to protect the people. When your knee hits a helmet, it's kind of like helmet on helmet with a bare knee.
Right.
It really is. But don't you take care of that before the game? When I was playing, the referee checked you out before the game, and he'd tell you right now, you better have, you know, blah, blah. I hated hip pads. We talking way back before your time, Shannon. So I had me a picture set in there that I had me a little knee pads. Gave me a little slits that I'd try to get away with. And a lot of times I did, but there's sometimes the referee coach, they'd see them, they go, no, you got to get rid of them things before the game starts.
Yeah.
Go, you know, so you just knew where it started from. I don't get why that didn't happen.
I don't know. Is those knee pads, is that a league rule or an NCAA rule?
That is a conference rule right now.
Oh, well, all I'm saying is, I understand. I really do understand why they do it, because it's the knee to the helmet more than it has anything to do with And more than anything to do with protecting the knee, it's more about protecting the people hitting you in the knees and stuff on a bare knee. And it does. You ever been kneed in the side of the helmet? I'm going to tell you. No,
it's not fun.
It hurts. It's no fun. Yep. But my gosh, really? I mean.
Well, I think that, you know, these kids, everybody wants to look pretty out there nowadays. And it's not that the pads weren't in because they were in, but because you used to cut ours in WC. Yeah. I used to cut mine, big old bulky things. I didn't like that crap.
Yeah.
I wanted to be light as possible. So I would take the shell. I would actually take the cushion. There's cushion, and then there's the plastic shell inside of the pad. I'd cut it there and take out a piece of it. I mean, I doctored up because you wanted to be light. I didn't care if I got hit in the legs. It wasn't about my legs. I figured if I make a good tackle, my leg's not going to get hit anyway. I'm tackling with my face mask. So
exactly.
I get it. I just didn't. That was my first time being and watching a game or seeing on TV ever to have, at least three minimum calls about some freaking pads. I mean,
four, actually.
Calls between both teams. It was ridiculous.
Well, then
I got to tell you what was ridiculous, too, is a couple of guys got called on the same thing twice. I'll put that back on the player at least to know, dude, they never sent you just sideline once for it. Don't get right. You get sent again, that's a little bit of you.
Well, Shewa was called twice, and I watched him the second time he was called. He came off, and he's holding his hands up like, you got to be kidding me. It's like, you know, he's pointing down at his knees. He's got his hands up in his air. So, I mean, he obviously thought he was in compliance when he got called out the second time, and obviously the refs disagreed with that. But, yeah, that you have to admit, if you're called twice on that kind of a thing, and if it's legit, and with this officiating crew, who knows? But, you'd think the coaches would be all over that.
Is that the fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me?
Yeah.
I will say that. I will say Patterson, that was one thing. He wasn't happy with the officiating and everything. But he said, on that one deal, he said, I'm going to kind of put it back on the players because they told us about it.
Yeah.
They told us about it. And he says, my players weren't smart enough to.
They weren't taking it seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, that's that deal again, too. Well, no, I'm not going to say that. I'm going to let it alone. Because I'd be like Shannon. I'd be like, anything I could get away with not having to wear, I was good with. I mean, like you said, even as a lineman, if I'm getting hit in the knees or the thighs, all I'm going to be told is how high I've been playing all day long. So, you know.
Right.
Well, with that, you know, the game ended up being a win. Like you said, it wasn't a pretty win, but it was a win this team needed at this particular time, especially going into the bye. So it was a good Saturday. When the cards are down, it was a good Saturday. So it's nice to see that. We do get the bye. We end up with Texas Tech next week, which we'll get into Texas Tech in just a little bit. Or not this podcast, but the next podcast. But I want to throw one other small little thing before we wrap this up. This weekend is Red River Rivalry, Texas OU. I want to ask the panel, who do you think wins the Red River Rivalry? Wes, let's start with you.
OU in this one. I don't think Texas can stop them.
All right. WC?
Man, I don't know. I mean, you know, I would have thought.
Well, Texas has done some upsets in the past.
I mean, I mean, I know that. So I'd probably lean with OU, but it wouldn't surprise me if Texas did win. I tell you what, I'm going to go ahead and go with Texas. I think they're going to pull up.
All right, Shannon.
Well, the only thing I didn't like about my high school colors, it was too close to Oklahoma, and I have not liked Oklahoma.
You're not a Boomer Sooner fan, are we?
I'm not. And I have a lot of people from my hometown. They love the Sooners. And I'm telling you, I would love nothing other than for Texas to go and upset them. Yep. And then on top of that, they beat us. So we need them, you know, my opinion.
Exactly right.
Yep.
So
yeah. I'm going to say the same thing.
I see the tradition of that game. I'm going Texas. I'm going upset Texas because I know confidence is everything. Momentum is everything. And we've seen Oklahoma. Give it up twice already. So with that being said, I'm going Texas in an upset this weekend.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. And the reason why I agree, here's something we didn't get a chance to touch on, but I'll be honest with you. I think this last 3 weeks for our offense is probably going to be the hardest 3 weeks they're facing the rest of the season. As I think Ohio State, Texas, and Iowa State have the three best defenses outside of TCU in the Big 12 or the top three defenses we're going to face all season. Iowa State has a really good defense, guys, and I think that's great. Texas has a fantastic defense, and I think the problem with Oklahoma at this point is their offense has not been truly tested yet. Now, right. I don't think Texas's offense is anything to write home to, but right. If they're going to win, it's going to be on the back of their defense, and I think their defense has what it takes. So we'll see how it goes. Hopefully they do get the upside.
Texas got enough to make some big plays.
Definitely. Definitely. They've got a really good secondary. And I think they're gonna give OU some fits. So
yeah. I don't think it'll be a cakewalk like the old Boomer Sooner fans are thinking it's going to be, I'll be honest.
No.
I feel like this. I would be shocked if OU just put a whooping on them. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I would be too. I think it's gonna be a close game.
Yeah.
I think most of OU's games for the most part have been fairly close. What was that, Deborah?
I said that I think this is one of the games you're going to want to watch this weekend. It's going to be a good one.
Yeah.
I agree.
I'm definitely going to do that.
Shannon, you mentioned your old high school team, the Fighting Farmers of Louisville, and how their colors are close to Oklahoma. But you had a cause to celebrate this weekend as your jersey got retired.
I did. It was an honor. It was a proud moment, and not just for me, but for my family, my friends, teammates. The district's been around 121 years, and I'm the first ever to get his jersey retired and acknowledge my records and acknowledge what I've done off the field, acknowledge what I've done at TCU. I found out how this come about because I wanted to know. And so it was a process. It was something that they felt like, and there was a bunch of great athletes come through, but it just felt like I was the one who stood out at the end of the day when they wanted to do something to kind of get the tradition back on the yard, as we say. And so it was an honor. It was a blessing. And it was a lot of fun, a lot of energy, but it wore me out. So I'm appreciative. I'm humbled, but I'm glad it's done.
Man, big congratulations there, brother, because that stuff don't come around to everybody. I mean, to retire the number, that's pretty dang awesome.
Well, Walter Garrison's, he went to Louisville. He's a cat. He's a good guy. Still alive, has a ranch out here. And our jerseys hang together back there. And he went to Louisville. And his jersey's not retired and for whatever reasons. But I was even humbled by that because he, hell of a man, hell of a player. And first person to go up to the NFL, play with the Cowboys out of the district. And so, you know, when you start putting your name up against people like that and that kind of person is sending love to you, man, you can't help but to just kind of be humbled and just really appreciative of the time. And I appreciate it.
I tell you what, it was nice seeing your family, too. I saw that picture you posted on Instagram with all your kids with the T-shirt with your number on the back and the name, and that was a great family photo, man.
Hey, everybody delegated in the moment.
Yeah. I got to talk to his wife this weekend. He married so far up.
Yeah. Hey, I'll tell you way what. Out of his league.
I get that all the time, and I know we all do, but I'm like, hey, that's what I was told two things. Yo, when you get to TCU, you play some great football, and you find somebody to help you.
Yeah, I kicked your coverage.
Yes, I did. You know, definitely did that. I'm a blessed individual. I'll tell you that.
Yes, you are.
You got a whole track team out there too. That's great. So.
Hey man, I think about the future, Wes.
I'm telling you, brother.
I saw the fastest girl in the yard. And I said, okay, that's her. That's the one I need. Hey,
she wasn't that fast. You caught her.
Right. what did the T-shirt say back in my day? I could play.
That's true. Amen.
In your day, you could play.
Amen. Well, talking about track, let's switch gears and let's pick up the final question of the day. And that was this: what makes Ben Banigou better than Leon Lett? Banigu can actually cross a goal line and score a touchdown.
Yeah, run the right direction.
Yeah, and that, I tell you what, I Shannon and I were talking about this. That if that ball was stripped at the 50, I don't think Ben actually makes it to the end zone, because that Iowa State receiver was hot on his tail. But man, Ben had fire in his belly, and he made it all the way. And that was a great score to see.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, that's what we need. That's a big spark for us.
That's right.
As I was saying, sometimes the surprise touchdowns are a little bit harder. Your body don't go as fast. Like the ones where you break on the ball, you see it, it's a pick, boom, you're gone.
Yeah.
But the one where you just like, oh, there it is, and you pick it up, and you just try to get it and go, those are kind of unexpected. And I tell you, that receiver was hot on him, and we were like, get there, buddy, get there. And another 20 yards. I tell you what, if you put a video of him and Leon letting run and in the same screenshot, I'm telling you, they look identical.
it was good to see it. A big congrats to Ben Banigu for that, because that was well deserved for a game. He fought hard that entire game. So
yeah.
So that was good. But in the end, the Frogs win, and that brings us to the end of the podcast. I want to thank everybody out there who's listening to us. We're available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. You can also find Killer Frogs on all social media networks, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook. You can also go to killerfrogs.com, sign up for a free account, and discuss TCU athletics with the rest of us knuckleheads, and also get your latest TCU news on frogswire.com. And with that, we've come to the end of the podcast. It's the time where we all get to knuckle up and say,
go Frogs!
Go Frogs!